Thank you so much for coming. It's so many people that came to check our talk about this long and interesting and diversely exciting project. Okay, let's start with... So last year's budget was a bit difficult, we understood that. More oriented for the more involved technical people, I guess. So for this year, we thought we would make it a bit more accessible and a bit more solvable for everybody, and a bit more interesting and a bit more educative in that sense. So we were thinking for a while, okay, we could again do something within a historical period, but make it connected to hackers and communication, so to make it relevant and fun that way. So then we started to tap into the 19th century in which the telegraph was invented, and alongside that the first basic remote communication, instant communication. So after doing a bunch of historical research, we started to jot out some ideas of what we could do, perhaps. And at the beginning, we wanted to have a folding device, the flexible PCB. But then Renze offered us a bunch of e-ink displays at a really good price. So we took that. And then we let go of the folding idea. Instead, we focused on having a user interface, so to speak, underneath the e-ink. And then the task split into two difficult ways. One, to figure out how to optimize the e-ink, because when we first received them, they had a 30 seconds refresh rate, which is, let's admit, nobody has that patience, right? So that was for the software people to figure it out. And I was focusing on the artwork, the PCB artwork at first. And as previously, I was provided with a very simple shape to play on. So we could have complicated it, but we based the entire thing on the first electrical telegraph, which had 5 needles to work with. We really wanted to make the needles work, but it was not possible, unfortunately, because it's so small, tiny hardware. You could lose it, you could break it. It will break the badge, it could hurt you. So we used LEDs instead to simulate a sort of needle movement, which we will talk about later. That's a bit of PCB art shenanigans. So on the left is a sketch, which we sent as first prototype. On the right is the real size of the real badge. I printed it to see how small it actually is, because on the screen, you don't see, you don't feel the real scale of how small is small. And although you can see numbers on the manufacturer's website, like this is the tolerance, this is the minimum, okay. So printed, it looked alarmingly small, but we decided to go with it and hope for the best. In the end, it came out as we hoped, more or less. I'm happy with it anyway. So that's for a design process. There's sorry, it's been a long weekend, and now I look at the badge and it's done and I'm really happy, but thinking about it just yes, I'm looking forward to you hearing how the rest of the process went, because that is really interesting and full of things. But for now, we also wanted to give you some SAOs again, which stands for Super Add-on. Okay? Let's make it a new trend, because that's how trends start, right? We make it popular. So every year I try to make something a bit more crazy, a bit more new, because once you start into learning a process, you always want to experiment a bit further and push things a bit further and annoy manufacturers a bit more, right? So I thought, what if we use the dithering like you see in newspapers, the halftone, but not a silkscreen, is set on the copper. So I extracted this dithering out of the copper to give it a more matte, like a, how to say this? A shaded, a flat look, yes. Because you have it, I hope I gave most of you one already. If not, please see us at the batch desk.
We still have pins left.
We have a lot.
Yeah.
So if you look at it with the light, it plays in a different way in every angle. And that's because of the little dots. There's a better picture here. I was not super sure if the manufacturer would complain about it, but we thought we will just do it anyway. And they can say if they don't like it. So this is very tiny, and I'm hoping to do more with this technique because I really, really like the results. So more to come of that. Speaking of madness, Renze asked me to make this nice and to fit into the team. So that's what happened. It's inspired from 19th century England brooches. It originally has copper engraving, so I wanted to imitate this feel of it. But yeah, if you make something boring and you ask me to make it more nice, that's what you get most likely. I keep the word to Guru.
And now I'll be talking a little bit about the hardware part of the project. So I'm Guru. I worked on the hardware, a bit of the production, and a bit of a few of the cursed things I should maybe not have worked on. And the main thing I wanted for this badge was to have wireless communication. So Espressif came up with the SP32C6 right around the time we began the project, released it. So we went for that. That was a pretty straightforward pick, and Espressif always is very supportive of badge.team. So we got them sponsored pretty smoothly. The next thing was, okay, now we have wireless communication. We have the idea of trying to make a Morse telegraph badge with the Victorian theme. How do we make it an interesting input system so that we can have people interact with the badge? And another requirement that we had for this badge was for people to use it without having to sit down and use it with a computer. So, and then Renze came up with the idea of using old supermarket e-paper tags that a German supermarket was selling at a really low price as they were getting rid of them. So we went for that.
€1 a piece.
Yes, €1 a piece. Very, very cheap because for inks, yeah. So to give you a rough idea of the budget for these things, like I think if we went to off-the-shelf e-paper screens, they will probably be more expensive than the rest of the batch combined. So that's how much money we'd be saving on that, which is pretty important and also very, very cool. We get to hack a second-hand e-paper screen that we get no data sheet for, no part number that we can make anything that we can find much useful data for. So we had to scavenge data from a GitHub from someone that has done a little bit of work with us display and figure out the rest ourselves, which was a pretty involved process. So we had to figure out the how to hack the sitting table that is inside the display. The way those work in supermarkets is that they receive, they have their own little PCBs that we got rid of, that they receive an update, and the screen display the update over 25 seconds. That will be way too slow to make any sort of game out of this. No one will wait for the full 25 seconds. And actually, if you want to see that in action, there is a little setting that you can change to see that. In the end, we ended up so looking at the settings on there, see which data sheet it matched, and eventually found out that we can reduce some of the time at the cost of some of the colors. So this is one of the screens before we made them display anything. So there you go, a pasta
upside down for the fun.
Yeah, that's how the e-paper tags are usually oriented. So that's Yeah, that's what they look like in the wild. If you go to a supermarket, you usually see some of these. And
can I just, that's also the thing that we could have just left it like this and let you add your name to it, but we wanted more and more. And we managed to do most of it. So
yes,
let's
so
show you.
the goal was to essentially get to drive the display at a faster rate, but also not with absolutely crap colors. So what you see on the left is using the display with the one second refresh rate settings that we have, where we skip essentially all the different phases where the screens try to push back the ink to essentially make a very neat and differentiated output where it makes the colors very clean. So we have to keep some of those steps to save on time so that we get a faster refresh rate, and it comes as a trade-off of having better colors. So in the end, we found after much experiments, we found that while we can just push all the ink, the white ink forward in a single frame, and we get a few more frames to push the black ink forward, so it's and then the red ink forward, so that if you move the menus really quickly, then you still get to see the change, so you can navigate it fairly quickly if you want to. But also, if you just happen to be waiting about 4 seconds, then you get to see the black and then the red display properly, which is really helpful. The map will not will be very difficult to use if that was not there. Same for the point and click. So that ended up being very, very useful. And another little trivia is that's on the left, bottom left, is a circle. So obviously we display pixels, but if you have a very, very quick refresh rate, then you get very unprecise dots on your screen. And if you do spend the time to cycle through the properties through the different layers, then you get a lot more accuracy, which also played into trying to make things look pretty and making an experience out of that. Yeah, Chief Antek.
Yep. I'm CH23, not to be confused with CH32, which is the coprocessor. I've been named that a lot of times during this process. Point and click. I developed the point and click game in this. Even though it doesn't have a mouse pointer, you can still point and you can definitely click. You can hear the clicks all the time. So, technically, still correct. Trials and tribulations. When I joined this team, the original plan was for me to help Nicolette to animate some sprites. But at some point, a number of people realized that I just couldn't commit to the process, to the project, and so we had to change our planning around that. And of course, the display refresh rate also makes it that we had to change things and kind of give up on animating stuff fluently. So we had a number of meetings, and we finally settled on some ideas for the badge. We had Memento Mori, the lighthouse, and a game about horse races. And I got some inspirations on how to work these games in together. And together with Zach, one of our team members, Nicolette, we eventually got to a plan. And the plan was that Memento Mori, which is the point-and-click game, would then be the intro to the lighthouse, and then from the lighthouse that would be followed by the race. And I got inspired for the Memento Mori game. And I think it was around the same time that we first got a look into the actual display capabilities, so the black, red, and white. And the screen made me think of the original Macintosh and some of the games that were available on the original Macintosh. And one of these games available is called The Manhole. And The Manhole was a game made by Rent and Robin Miller. And these people would later go on to make one of my all-time favorite games. And you win a bottle of Mate if you know which game.
Mist.
Yep, there you go. Only one bottle. So, yeah. Mist. I've been playing Mist since I was 10, maybe younger, and many iterations of it. I have it on my Quest with me as well, which is still fun. And it's still like one of my favorite games, and these kind of games really, like, yeah, I love them. So then we have a game plan, and we have a screen that's tiny, 296 by 128 pixels, and then three colors, kind of one bit, but it's difficult because you have black and red, so don't know how to really go about that. So for the game plan, I made a graphic, which you see on the left. Yeah, and I wanted to know how this was displayed because I wanted to do some dithering. And well, as you can see, it displays wrong, which is something that I only saw that this was wrong just now when I was making this part of the presentation. But I did notice it during the gameplay that sometimes the screen would flip colors. I'll get back to that. So yeah, the idea was to hand draw everything, so make pixel art. But I forgot I have fantastic drawing skills, so that wasn't going to happen. Instead, I have worked with Blender twice before, not like actually twice before. And this is one of the things I made, which is a lens holder, which works. It zooms, it looks terrible, but it was fun. Yeah, so Blender it is. Here you can see the actual thing, which I eventually made into the pictures you see on your badge. Always fun. Blender. Here we go, Blender. So I made everything you see here. I first had the idea when I made this to draw over it, so it didn't really matter how it would look, which is why the island itself is very low poly. And then eventually it turned into having to make some stuff that actually looks okay, even though we're going to dither it and put it on the screen. You might recognize this library. So that's part one. So now we have this. This is grayscale, doesn't work on the actual display. So I had to come up with a shader. I didn't even know how to do shaders in Blender because I'm basically new to it. Eventually I found online some people who already did this kind of stuff. And so we have a one-bit shader which actually works, and which is what we mostly used to draw everything. Yeah, as I said, we found more problems. The display shows the images inverted. Why does this happen? Because the first pixel, so top left, isn't white. Great. So I had to go over all the images and make sure that every pixel is, every left top left pixel is white. And after doing that, finally, success, and yeah, we got what we have today. So yeah, this was basically my third time I used Blender for anything, but I knew the controls, so I was okay. And I learned from this that it's always worth trying new things, because I started out just helping Nicolette, and in the end, I made a game, which is not something I expected to do this year.
A pixel game in Blender.
Yes.
In 129 by 296 pixels.
Yes. I would like to add one thing. So at the start, when I wanted to make this game, the navigation, I didn't know if this was possible, because at the time we had a refresh rate for adding red that was pretty slow. We managed to increase that, which makes that if you wait a little bit, you see what you can click by the red on the screen. So kind of, yes. Hint system, yes.
Patience is a virtue, right? Yes, so this was the only game I didn't influence aside adding some mugshots of some characters included. So if you got as far as to see some humans, that was the only thing that I made. Otherwise, it's all his work. I still can't process you made a pixel game in Blender, though, but it was in front of my eyes. It's incredible. The other games are less involved technically and more simple. We wanted something that is related to the team, but also familiar to you. So one is Battleship. But even for that, with Zach, who is not here, but I hope he's watching, he helped us develop and find some historical trivia so we could make it not a murder game, but more a rescue-oriented game, because the SS Carondelet was actually an immigrant carrier ship between Cuba and New York, I think.
You did all the research.
That's why I can keep everything in this. Anyway, yes. So it was one of Zach's wishes to try to avoid anything that is related to killing, murder, fatalities. So we had to make sure that we replace kill with
sunk,
which is it doesn't imply you're dead. It can just imply that your ship is damaged to the point where it can't carry you. And defeated instead of devastated. You know, we had to play with the words a little bit. On the contrary, we also developed a hangman game, but with a guillotine.
It's a retractable blade.
It's swift, it's fast, yeah, faster. Yes, and it's... Never mind. The guillotine was made for a specific group of people, and the other ship... the ship game is made for different types of people, so... You know what I mean. Sorry. But even so, we wanted to make it fun within the context again. So we also wanted to implement two different dictionaries for the guillotine game, the Diebler. Diebler was the last executioner in France. Which perhaps if you look through near the reception, you would see a poster of a newspaper page, which explained some things about his last mission. And because we wanted to not make the game too hard, there's two dictionaries. One is English, general English, and the other is more Victorian 19th century oriented words list. So you can choose. These are little frames that I did, and a little sketch here. So not everything needs to come out perfect immediately. You can sketch even as a pixel art, I guess. Is this still true? Is this still true, Dimitri?
It's still true.
Okay, good. Thank you. Now to the lanyard. So it was always in the back of our minds that we need a lanyard, but of course, in the middle of all this, we left it to the last month because we had too many other things to think about. So I did some quick research on patterns and what it could look like to fit this aesthetics of the badge. And then this ribbon came up, but then we didn't really have colors set in yet. And then I had this revelation of green. 19th century, right? You might have heard these rumors how Napoleon died. He might have been poisoned, perhaps because he stayed too much in a room with green wallpaper. And I hear some laughter in the background. Some of you may know that these wallpapers have been dyed with a very specific pigment of green called Scheele's green or copper arsenic. So I made sure that the lanyard you are wearing is this exact same green, so...
Don't lick it.
If your neck starts itching, don't scratch it. But also, it's not the real Scheele's green, so you don't have to worry about it. On that note, you might have noticed that two of us were slanted, because that was our intention. And then came Dimitri pointing out something that we knew, but...
I rewind a little bit because I didn't read the note I made for the previous section, and that is a recurring theme. I'll talk about that in a second. The input system for the Telegraph, we wanted to figure out something that was easy and straightforward to use. So the original Telegraph, which is the Wheatstone and Cook Telegraph, we base this badge off, had instead of the classic spin around. There you go, the classic Morse telegraph everyone is familiar with. That was a similar thing, but with a bit of an idea of a keyboard where you essentially select a letter through the needles that will tilt left and right, and then point over the right character. And I also wanted to find an excuse to use those little multidirectional switches since forever, and found the perfect match for that. Another thing I mentioned before, but didn't explain why, the coprocessor is there is because we ran out of inputs on the ESP32. So we used a little wonderful chip that's called the VH32. And because 10p is RISC-V and is wonderfully fast and offers a lot of extra IOs. And there you go, finally goes my note. Back to the lanyard. So because I cannot read,
so as we said, this was as intended, and we accepted it, and we assumed everyone else understood it, because people read, right? And you look at the pictures, right?
When I checked the lanyard, the lanyard I had in mind was the same one as for MCH 2022, with two hooks on the side. So I checked the lens, I checked the width, I checked the footprint on the side, I checked if it had the right type of hooks, and I checked it didn't have the stupid little clip that sometimes you find on some lanyards that I don't really like. And I didn't check if it was one or two hook, so we had to do a little bodger sweatshop of printing a lot of those little adapters that worked out wonderfully, and no one complained about it.
No one.
None at all.
So, all well doesn't well.
But that also just means that we were so focused on a lot of things that we overthought a bit, overlooked the simplest things, yes.
So yeah, we also had a bit of a rocky software development. I'm mostly, I'm a mechatronic engineer for a living. I've done a tiny wee bit of software. Not really anything to this scale just yet, so implementing that was a little hard, and thanks to everyone who submitted an issue on GitHub. And we fixed all of them, and there's plenty more where it came from.
Keep them coming.
I've wrote 11 pages of content, and we will slowly feed it into the update, so stay tuned because the game is not finished yet.
So it's a bit on the production as well. When the editor is on Little Sweatshop to disassemble the e-paper tags, and then that's the production that Tom helped us a lot to get ordered from China, and also worked with Norbert to produce the PCBs. The Sweatshop, that actually is one part of batching that is not botched in. It ran really well, no botches, ran super smoothly thanks to everyone that organized it. It was really, really, really good. And yeah, update your badge at home. If you need, if you want to, you can just set your Wi-Fi creds inside it. You just go into the engine room, press the Wi-Fi button, set your Wi-Fi password just like you would on your phone, and then press OTA just like you did here. And then your badge will be updated with the greatest and latest when I get to sleep a little bit and update the badge. And so just the screens, if you need them, that's what they will look like. Finally, please, everyone, go on your badge and open the billboard.
So as DIVD, I have to step in and do what we always do. There's a CV in your badge. Sorry, Mike.
I have to step in and warn everybody there's a CVE in the badge. So it's time to patch your badge, and I'm going to break all rules about proportionality and DDoS every badge in the room. If your badge crashes now, it's not updated to the latest and greatest, please do so. This is not how we normally operate, but you have to express permission.
Oops.
CVEs are important because it's not like, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the badge. So the very first event badge with a CVE, and I hope there's more to come.
And that is it. Thanks for everyone for your attention. And if you have any question, now's the time.
Just one question, maybe, and well, Dimi is wiring up.
As a major fan of Myst, have you played the parody version Pissed?
Not yet.
I can recommend for laughs and giggles, okay. But it might ruin Myst for you.
Thanks.
In that case, thank you, and next time, new badge.